Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Tesla Motors Club podcast. My name is Seb.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Lewis.
On today's episode, Duck getting victimized again by another hit and run, the Model Y Hardware 4 controversy, the return of the battery swap, and a quick review of the latest Tesla podcast, Land of the Giants. Episode 48 starts now. Gentlemen, hello. Good to see you guys.
Hey.
I think somebody was saying that we're running late, which is not true because you're in Italy, Doug. So we're on Italian time where dinner starts at 10 p.m. apparently.
Pretty much. And it's actually pretty much dinner time right now. So I'm going to put off my dinner until we're done with this. But yeah, it's a little late. It's a little late here. But I'm dressed for the part.
I love it. I love the hat.
Looks good.
I'm offended.
Don't be offended. Hey, I'm part Italian, so you know.
Just teasing.
But it helps with the try to get the sun off your face too much, but it breathes, you know. So it turned out to be the best hat. My normal tam o' shanter, you know, newsboy was just too warm. And you know, it's been hot actually, but the weather was pretty good for most of my time here. Still warm, but you know. And I've been sort of around the country. I'm in Rome now, and it's pretty hot here. It's like 90 degrees, but it's still better than, I think like a couple of weeks ago or so, it was, you know, over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. I was told like 40 Celsius, which is terrible.
It's hot. It's
terribly hot. You would know. You speak European.
I speak metric, yeah.
So anyway, it's been... the nice time
doesn't
here.
Doesn't sound that hot to me, but I'm in Austin, so where every day is over 40.
Well, I mean, you know, it's the whole climate change thing, right? I mean, Maui is on fire, right? And it's terrible. And we've had that happen in California, and you know, amazingly, that was happening in Canada of all places. You know, like a month or so ago.
Buy an EV, right? That's where you're going with that.
Yeah, buy an EV, but you know, it takes more than that. So I don't know. That's another podcast, I guess.
Probably. Well, thanks for making time. I know it's late. So kind of walk us through the preparation for this trip, right? I think you're going to be in Italy for another 10 days or so.
Yeah.
You get ready for this trip, you pack, you make sure you pack that fancy hat you're wearing.
I bought this year, obviously.
The night before you leave, what happens to your car?
You know, this is such a rough thing. So, you know, I'm fairly mobile. And so, you know, my car has to sit someplace when I'm someplace else. And, you know, I've had a couple times, I'm leaving my car somewhere. And I had a trip to California that I expected to only be a few days, and I didn't put the cover on the car. And then while I was gone, you know, I was under a tree and got a bunch of bird poo on it, you know. So this time I'm like, okay, well, let me make sure I get the cover on it. I know I'm going to be gone for a little while. And I parked the car, not in the driveway, but sort of on the street, because I want to wash it before I put the cover on. And, you know, I guess how many months ago was that? That was, when was it? I forget. Last time I had I got hit and run before, right? And some guys, and we showed video of it, and these guys, and I was there. I like saw it happen, or at least heard it happen. And these dudes just sort of pulled out and peeled out and left. So here it is. Yeah, the night before I'm about to go, and I didn't find this out until the morning of when I'm about to get picked up. Here let's roll the tape. Let's see, what's the best way to do this? There it is. Here we go. Okay. What do we got here?
It had to be a pickup truck too, huh?
Yeah. So part of the problem here is that this road is, you know, for those who can't see, it's sort of some video here. This road is a dead end, okay? And so people turn down this road. And then they find out, oh, they can't go anywhere. So what do? They back up and try to leave. Here's my car after washing it. And this guy's backing up. You know, you can hear that diesel. And come on, dude. Are you that blind? and he hits my car. Crunch. And, you know, the car kind of reacts. The lights come on. I didn't get a notification or anything. He thought, you know, I wish the alarm had gone off. It should have been screaming, hey, someone just hit me. Mm-hmm. But nothing really happened. And what's funny is this guy, look at it. He's like thinking about it. He's just sitting there. He's like, oh, did I do something? And yeah, he's just like contemplating for a while. And in fact, he takes so much time thinking about it that, you know, this sort of Ring video just kind of ends before he leaves. But there was no note left or anything. So it's basically a hit and run. And it's another time when I wish the Tesla cameras were better. I can sort of see the license plate, but not definitively in the Sentry mode video. And you know, I have Tesla insurance, and I got in touch with them. And the thing is, I didn't know till that morning, right? Till the next morning. And the dumb thing is, I actually went out to the car. Like this happened at I think 9:05 p.m. And at 9:08, I actually went outside because I had washed the car, but it was really humid, and I realized, oh, the car isn't really going to be dry by the morning. So I went out there with a microfiber towel and just sort of wiped off the horizontal surfaces, the roof, the hood, the trunk. And didn't bother with the vertical surfaces, right? And it's dark. I didn't even notice that that the car had been hit. You know, I didn't even notice until the next morning. Because the next morning I'm going to move it into the parking spot and put the cover on it. So that sucks. So I called the cops, and the cops were not going to do anything. I said, hey, I have a video that it kind of shows a partial plate, thinking that they'll do some figuring out. They didn't do anything. And there's like, okay, what you do is you call your insurance. Okay, yeah, thanks. So I call my insurance, or at least I send an email and go through the app, actually use the Tesla app. And there's this whole sort of steps. It's a little bit convoluted, actually. But they have all these steps on the app to try to describe what happened. Like one of the worst things about the app is that you're supposed to upload photos. And I had taken a bunch of photos beforehand, and I had them on my phone. So I'm able to do this while, you know, I'm being driven, to the airport. And one of the dumb things about it is, okay, it wants photos from this particular angle. So I'm sort of selecting the photos, and then you go to the next, and it wants it from another angle. Okay, and I took enough photos, I was able to supply these. And then I go back, like, oh, maybe I want to change one of those photos. And I go back, and the photos I already uploaded are gone. So I have to upload them again. And that's really dumb. It should just keep your photos on each page. It should keep the work that you've already done. So I was annoyed that going back wasn't just an opportunity to edit. It was like, oh, you have to redo everything on this particular page. So if anyone from Tesla is listening, please fix that aspect of the app. But then, you know, they send me an email, and then that's fine. Now there's a insurance agent working on it, and then I can just communicate with that person. And I was able to sort of describe better what happened, and I made a folder with all my photos and stuff. And here, go to this folder, you can get everything, and then all the videos and stuff. But they weren't able to really see the license plate, and if they can't track down the other guy, then it's on me, or it's, you know, it's on my deductible. And kind of worst thing about that is, you know, it hit the car. You know, the car doesn't seem, it got the mirror and the car. There's no, like, I don't think the car is dented at all, but it definitely messed up the wrap. And the wrap is probably a very expensive wrap that I got through a partnership with 3M. And I don't know yet. Like, I'm not even there, you know, but like, it might have damaged the paint underneath. It likely did. And then, yeah, the driver's side door, that's just a mess. The wrap is just all scraped up. Now, you would think, okay, well, can they just replace the wrap on that panel? You know, I don't know. I mean, I got the wrap a couple years ago, so the whole thing is sort of fading. a bit with time. 3M tells me that's a 7-year product. So they expect that, you know, with normal sort of sun exposure, that you'll probably want to replace it within 7 years. So in 2 years, you know, it's not a horizontal surface, it's a vertical surface, so they get, you know, those get less UV exposure. But, you know, I'd like to hope that, oh, just replace, and it's going to be out of my pocket probably. I don't know that Tesla insurance is going to cover my wrap, you know. They might cover, you know, fixing up the paint underneath the wrap. Can they just replace that, or will it like stick out like a sore thumb because, oh, the new part looks so new compared to the rest of the car? So it is pretty disappointing. You know, I got hit before and the person scraped the front of the car, but on the front of the car, I have a PPF over top the color change wrap, and the PPF is sort of scuffed, but you know, it just didn't seem worth dealing with. Like it wasn't especially bad damage, even though it sounded pretty terrible. Whereas this one, I feel like, okay, like it's very obvious the damage here. So
I just have to say real quick, sorry.
Yeah.
All of your horror stories of your car with being parked places makes me have anxiety anytime I have to park my car somewhere, because at home it's in a garage, it's perfectly safe.
Yeah. But
anytime I go to a store or a friend's house and it's like, oh, I got to park in the street, or I got to park, and it gives me anxiety because I'm like, I'm going to be Doug where someone's going to back into my shit and just, you know, just to be enough to like mess up your thing. Ugh. Anyway, I'm grateful it hasn't happened yet.
And worse, like, you know, if I did that, I would leave a note, you know,
right.
The person's not here. I'd wait around for a little, I feel bad about it, you know, but I would take responsibility instead of like, oh, let me get out of here. And I wonder what the guy was doing there as he sat. Like, he just thought about it. Can I get away with this?
No, it just came to me. I just realized watching it again, because you showed it to me before, but now I realized, because the lights flashed for a moment, he must have thought someone's in the car. So he was like, I better wait, because they're probably going to come out and give me crap because I just hit them. And then after 5 minutes... No one came.
Nobody
out,
come out. And they're like, all right, I'm out of here. Yeah.
It's a bummer though.
Yeah, it's a bummer. So yeah, you know, the last time I was really insulted the last time, because I came, like, I happened to be there, my hands were full, and I hear it happen, and the person's there, and I'm expecting this person to come out and exchange information. I'm like, hey, you hit my car, and the person peels out and, you know, runs for it, and I was in, you know, shock about it, but you know, the actual damage wasn't that big of a deal, and it just, you know, it just seemed like, okay, let me not deal with it. And I have a brother who's kind of in law enforcement, and I, you know, his opinions about things, I guess he sort of thinks about the worst case scenario from everything. Actually, he's like an ex prison guard, you know, so it's kind of in that case, it's sort of worse than being a cop, right? Because at least you meet some people that are good people.
Criminal.
Yeah, everyone is actually a criminal. And it was like, well, you know, you could try to, like, this is a very unique car. You could probably track the person down and you know, have the cops come to them. But then they know where you live, and you just, you know, and you just mess things up for them. And then, like, they're going to retaliate or something. And so it's very, he had a very dark view of what would happen, me just trying to get my car fixed. He's like, get your incident number for your insurance and just leave it at that. And I'm like, okay. So I tend to think his view is a little bit skewed, you know? So anyway, but in this case, this is going to actually cost me money, and I do intend to get it repaired. And Mr. Pickup Truck, you know, please, you know, take care of this. But yeah, I don't know if we'll be able to track him down. Maybe I can get some help trying to process the Sentry Mode video. Like, maybe they can stack frames or something. At least in this case, like, again, we can't really see the license plate, but at least there's a chance of seeing it. Last time it was from the side, and the cameras are covered in rain. It was rainy and stuff. This time it's just nighttime. But it's amazing to me how bad the view is. Like, you know, why can't it see better? Also, I thought I'd read that Tesla said we would eventually have access to the other cameras. Like, if I could have gotten the B-pillar camera, I think that was the perfect view. I have the front camera, and then I have the side repeater, and the side repeater actually shows the, you know, the fender, I mean, the bumper hitting my car. But if I had the B-pillar, which is kind of looking side and forward, I would think that would be looking right at where the rear license plate was, and it would be able to give me a good, solid view. The only camera angle that I've ever actually, from Sentry Mode, that I've ever actually been able to properly read a license plate has been from the rear camera, right? And because I did get tapped. I got a little love tap from a delivery guy once, and I could read the license plate plain as day. He didn't leave a note or anything, but I was able to see what company it was, and I was able to like have him contact me and everything. And the end of the day, it was like, you know, it just wasn't, again, it just wasn't worth it to really do anything about it. Like, it's the tiniest little thing, and it's like, and this was some student, and you know, I've been a student too, and I just, the idea that weighing on you, and this is your job, and I just let it go. But it actually worked for me to, oh, I could actually see the license plate. I was able to track the person down. And that's the camera that is actually meant for human consumption, right? That's the camera that was designed for people to look at, whereas the rest of the cameras weren't. And hopefully with Hardware 4, you know, with the proper color and everything, that people can really see and read license plates and take care of these things. So, yeah, I mean, we said it before, what we'd like out of Sentry Mode. You know, okay, it was a software sort of afterthought, you know, implementing that. But now that it's something people want, you need to design for it and make it better. We got to be able to see at night. You should record audio, get the interior view too, get all the cameras and whatever telemetry, any other information, you know, I'm sure there are accelerometers in there. Let me know how much the car rocked when it got hit, you know, why not?
It needs a hit and run mode.
Yeah, seriously. Because that's been my only, I've had no moving accidents. You know, it's just that I've been parked and somebody else hits me.
Well, I have to show you this because Lewis mentioned he gets kind of anxious hearing you tell that story. And I get endless crap from my family, rightfully so, because this is how I park when we go grocery shopping. It's like the spot in the back of the parking lot, right, where no one can get near the car. Yep. It might be like half a mile away from the store, but that's always how I park for these spots.
Anytime my wife and I go somewhere, I'm always out far. I'll walk. I don't care. I'm walking. I don't want any other car near me. I'll be next, you know, in a spot where nobody can park next to me like you showed. Or yeah, I'm the same way.
You know, often I park like that. Okay, your parking was a little better because you had like these pillars next to you. Mm-hmm. I'll park way out. Invariably, some SUV, typically like a mom in a minivan decides
right
to park
next to
right next to me.
I know.
Why?
It's the urinal paradox.
It's like, why did you need to park right? I tend to think that maybe this person has trouble parking. And
without
like,
cars,
there's another car, and then they kind of line up to that car instead of just looking at the lines, or just, hey, move a couple spots away from me. You don't need to park next to me. You really don't. Anyway,
urinal paradox. You can have a whole empty bathroom and they got to stand and pee right next to you.
I like
those
that
people
analogy.
Are the worst.
Oh man. I did that once. I parked away from everything. I was taking, a family member to a doctor's appointment, and I'll just like, go ahead, and I'll just wait in the car, and I parked away from everything, and then here's the minivan, parks right next to me, and then they open their door, and like haphazardly, and whack my mirror. I'm like, and I'm right in the car, and they just whack my mirror. I'm just like, could you have done this any worse?
And see, I think this is the dilemma, I think. With my car, it's a 2015, I don't have Sentry Mode. So every now and then I walk around the car and it's got scratches, someone banged their door into it, But it's like a little bit easier to live with it because there's no evidence. I can't look it up.
Can't do anything about it.
I feel like the stress of now you having to chase down that pickup owner. I'm kind of glad that I don't even have access to the footage, you know?
Well, I mean, while we're on the topic, I mean, the other issue with Sentry Mode is you have so much footage. And, you know, I come back to my car and it tells me, oh, you have 5 Sentry alerts. Okay. And then the access is slow and I got to sit there and, okay, I'm going to look at this video. Did anything happen? Okay. Then I go to the next one. Did anything happen? And it's such a waste of time. What I would like is, okay, use some of that machine learning on this. Was a person detected? Did the person make contact with my car? Did the person key my car? I'm sure there are enough videos of that for a neural net to be able to identify this stuff. Maybe you don't have to do it locally. Maybe it happens in the cloud or something. But process those videos for me so I don't have to do it.
Did you scrub it in the car though? I would imagine like I would pull the hard drive and try do it on my desktop, right? I would try to look through the footage that way.
I'm just saying in general. Yeah, of course, when this happened, I pulled the hard drive and copied everything because the player in the car is a bit janky. But I'm just saying normal day-to-day, I go to the grocery store, I get back to my car, and I have, you know, 6 Sentry Mode alerts, and it's just somebody walked by. Somebody walked by the car or whatever. And so
I'll often wave. Like, I'll go up to the camera and I'll just, like, wave.
I'll do that if I see something interesting, you know, like someone has a neat wrap or something and I want to take a picture. And if I do that, I will wave because I understand I'm on camera. But, I'd like to not be spending that time. And most of the time, I don't even look, you know. But then maybe you notice something and then now you have to go try to find it. Oh, did that happen? And it's just not even worth it. It's just, just got to not deal with it. So, hey, that's another thing. And I think there probably are some third-party apps that will do that for you, that go do some machine learning and scrub through all your stuff and tell you if it detected anything. But Tesla could do all this, and that should be part of my $10 a month...
premium connectivity.
Yeah, my premium connectivity. Do that for me. Figure that out.
I agree. Well, I'm sorry that happened to you again. I don't know why it keeps happening, but let's move from one controversy, the hit and run controversy, to the Model Y Hardware 4 controversy. And Lewis, I think you had some thoughts as a gamer on what's happening with that particular change. What's going on? Bring us up to speed.
Yeah. So I don't know what, I mean, I know what Tesla's thinking, but I don't agree with it. I mean, it's got to be for cost savings. But anyway, so Green the Only, you know, known reverse engineer / hacker man, whatever you want to call him. He's been going through the hardware and the software for, Tesla for years now. And the new Model Y Hardware 4, the MCU, the infotainment computer, it looks like Tesla... reduce the specs or have some of the specs. Basically, it has half the RAM and half the storage of what the old Hardware 3 MCU had, which is incredibly disappointing because it's kind of like, why? Like, why are you reducing, you know, the amount of RAM is probably the biggest one. I mean, storage space as well. But so the current one has 16 gigs of RAM and 256 gigs of storage. And now it's down to 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gigs of storage. From a feature standpoint, the only thing that really impacts that we know of today is it basically means you won't be able to play Steam. You won't be able to do the Steam Deck or Steam games on a Model Y with Hardware 4. Now, technically, you're not supposed to be able to do the Steam games, I think, on Model Ys today as it is. So officially from Tesla, they haven't taken anything away. They only officially support it on Model X and Model S. It's a little, you know, disappointing that, hey, if the hardware was in there, right, when they first added that, we looked at it and said, hey, Model Y Hardware 3, it technically has some of the hardware that could do this. So they could provide that feature. They could even sell it to you if they wanted to. now it's not really possible. The way in which it works today, basically Steam is run in what's called a virtual machine on the computer. And it's given 8 gigs of RAM dedicated to it. So if you don't have at least 16 gigs of RAM, you basically, the computer isn't powerful enough to do Steam games and to do the rest of the, you know, the control that it needs for the car's operation. So, kind of sad news, disappointing news, that they're reducing the specs. However, I will say that people that have hardware 4 and a Model Y said that they, you know, from a usability, from a user perspective, things seem fast. Things seem like they're going, you know, they're working fine. You know, Green made a comment saying, well, yeah, that's because you don't have a bunch of crap on there yet. Basically, you know, using up the resources, kind of like as people experience their devices get slower over time as you get more and more software bloat. But yeah, I mean, the, you know, so we'll see. You know, I imagine this is cost cutting, right? Like they're basically saving money on every car, so that, you know, increases their margins. But yeah, I don't know.
So that's what it is. It's cost cutting, you think?
I can't see another reason for it. I mean, because if anything, right, like you've got these boards, you're mass producing, when you're manufacturing and you're mass producing, any deviation from the board design or the spec is like another process. It's another thing you have to deal with. So if you can just do single process, single part, and just keep it all the same, it's kind of easier. And now they basically are, you know, it's not a big change, right? They're probably just, you know, it's when they're doing the board fabrication, they're, you know, these are going to be embedded chips. So they're just not putting as many chips on it, or they're putting smaller, you know, different chips on there. I haven't looked at the board closely myself in person, so I couldn't say which way it is, but either way, like, a lot of times, you know, process, they won't do that. So for example, you know, my own experience, you know, semiconductor manufacturing, when they do manufacturing runs, they do runs of a set design, and then all those other models of chips they have, they're the exact same chip, and they go in with software and other things and they turn off components. They physically make identical stuff. And they'll sometimes they'll test it, they'll bin it. Right. But and they bin it for, you know, for yield reasons, or also just for, you know, market segment reasons. But in this case, they're physically, the hardware is slightly different with the chips that are there. So I imagine it's for cost cutting. I imagine, you know, these are the higher volume ones, right? So if you think about it, this is going to be the main production line, and it's really the Model S, Model X that are getting that extra boost of additional resources.
Right. Except that, you know, I thought this whole ability to run Steam was a selling point. You know, this is supposed to be the most fun vehicle. These are things you can do, you know, not that I would be playing Steam in the car. I mostly will watch a video or something while I'm waiting for, you know, for supercharging or whatever. And I do play games a little bit, but this was something that they touted, right? Are they not talking about that anymore? They're sort of quietly walking that back, or what, you know?
So they, you know, they still claim the same thing, right? It's still specifically, again, it's marketed for the Model S and X. I think, you know, there's a few options here. It's possible that, you know, Jones One in the chat mentions this, you know, Tesla's installing hardware 3.5. I said that in a previous podcast. Part of me feels like maybe this is not really hardware 4. It's hardware really 3.5, and they're transitioning to a real hardware 4. Because we've seen some changes, but we're not seeing all of the changes that we'd expect. And it's possible Cybertruck is the first real hardware 4 that we'll see. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is, you know, maybe they've realized, you know what, we don't actually need, you know, 8 gigs of RAM dedicated to the Steam Deck, you know, feature. Maybe they can do it with less. Maybe they can give all 8 gigs to Steam mode when you're in that mode. You can't use it while you're driving, right? You can only do it while your car is supercharging.
Right.
It does kind of take over kind of the whole infotainment section of the car. It's not something that I would use. Like, honestly, you know, my wife and I are both gamers. We have a Steam Deck. We have tablets. We have computers. You know, you have port, you know, handhelds. So you're just going to use those in the car anyway, because then you can use it while you're driving, even if you want to. Not that I am recommending doing that as the driver, but as the passenger, right? It's kind of unfortunate that, like, yeah, you have a Steam Deck capability, but the passenger can't play it while you're driving the car. It's just not know, possible to do. So this is more of a feature for like, yeah, you're supercharging and you need something to do, or, you know, you're in a situation, you know, where maybe you don't have power in your house or some other thing, but you got power in the car, you're camping somewhere or something, on a road trip, and you just want to, you know, play with it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's possible they make it work, or so, they're just giving up on Steam capability for Model Ys and threes.
Maybe. Like, what else would be using that? That's for the MCU, right? So what else is using that 8 gigs? Just your, like, the, none of the, is autopilot stuff using any of
that? The apps you're doing, the browser, you know, Zoom, if you're using the Zoom app, you know, your maps, all that kind of stuff. Most of those things don't need a lot of RAM, right? They run off of your cell phone pretty easily. They've run on, you know, they run on low end devices.
And then what about the FSD type stuff? Is that rely on any of that memory?
FSD is not dependent. It has its own dedicated computer for doing what it's doing. So
FSD is all on its own SoC. That, and is the RAM part of that SoC? Is it within?
Yes, correct. Okay. Yeah. This shouldn't impact FSD at all. So that's why it's kind of weird that they did it, because especially since it's a step down from what Hardware 3 had. And generally, hardware over time becomes cheaper, right? Like RAM becomes cheaper over time. CPU, it's the same CPU. So they haven't made the CPU, the processor, worse. It's the same CPU they had before. But they did reduce the RAM and the storage. And kind of like part of, I guess, where it bothers me is I'm still hopeful, you know, that one day Tesla will open things up. They'll make it like an app store, like Apple. They'll allow developers to make apps for the infotainment system, or they'll allow people to, you know, have more software on there. They opened it up for a few companies, like, for example, the Steam Deck, obviously, but they opened it up for Zoom now. You can have a Zoom call in your car. I would love for other folks to be able to make apps, and reducing the specs for any reason. The storage is how many apps you can load, the RAM, what types of apps they could have. Who knows what someone could have come up with that could have used those resources, but now they don't have the option, in at least in the Model Y, and which I assume will be similar for the Model 3.
That's an interesting point. You know, in my car, I still have MCU1, and I have a couple of friends who had older S's and X's, and they've upgraded to MCU2. I'm okay with it. Do you feel like with the 3 and the Y, there's going to be something similar in the future where you can maybe upgrade it? Because it might be a little trickier with the way the screen is mounted and all that jazz.
Yeah, so what we've seen so far, and this, again, primarily the source of this data is coming from Green, you know, Green the only. Basically, it does not look like it'll be upgradable. So the anyone that has Hardware 3, myself included, will not likely be able to upgrade to Hardware 3.5 or 4, whatever you want to call this, mostly called Hardware 4, primarily due to two reasons. One, the wiring harness stuff has changed. So there's additional wiring with the cameras, and the, you know, there's additional camera endpoints and things like that. But the main reason I would say is actually due to the fact that the mounting for the board, the actual module, will not fit with the existing mounting setup. So they actually changed the dimensions.
It's a completely different form factor.
Completely different form factor. So which is really, you know, that's again, we talked about this in the past. Like, that's why I was willing to spend the $12,000 for FSD on my car, because I went, well, when the next one comes out, I'll be able to upgrade. They've always done it in the past, and of course they're not doing it anymore. So that totally sucks.
Yeah. I gotta say, that's sort of disappointing. Like, I was hoping that, and of course you always have to, you know, think about, oh, you know, supporting like legacy hardware is kind of a pain in the butt, but
right.
My hope was that they would have some space, and there should be plenty of space for it, some space where, oh, whatever the processor is, whatever the whole processing unit, and it's mostly an SoC, and it's just, you know, some kind of daughter board or something, that would just come out, and you'd be able to just slot this thing in, and whatever cameras and all that stuff would already be connected, you know, with some Tesla universal, you know, electronic connector. And it would just connect. And then, you know, 10 years from now, the new quantum chip comes out, and I can just slide that in, and my car gets upgraded. And it looks like they're not really going that route.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing for sure. I agree, because I mean, there are many standard form factor connectors that have been around for years. There are I've been building, computers for 30 plus years now. And yeah, there have been a few transitions over the years of different, connector types that have changed.
ISA, ESA,
ISA, exactly.
PCI.
Yeah. You've got, your IDE versus SATA versus whatever.
Right.
Like, things have changed over the time, but like, you'll generally have a form factor that lasts, especially now. Some of these form factors have lasted.
Yeah, PCI has been around
over
for a
decade,
now.
Right? Yep. Like,
I miss SCSI.
And yeah, SCSI. SCSI's still kind of around, sort of.
Yeah, kind of.
It's just, you won't use it in your desktops at home usually. But anyway, so the thing is, it's like they could have had a form factor. They could have had one. They could have had a standard power. They could have had a standard, form factor for where the board sits, communications, all those types of things. And they kind of did for a little while, and now they've changed it. Now, were those changes necessary for something coming in the future? Maybe, maybe they won't change it again. Maybe the new one is going to handle their plan for the next 5 to 10 years. Who knows? But to me, it seems likely that they didn't want to, as Doug said, it can be a pain in the butt to have to worry about legacy stuff. And it seemed kind of like they were like, you know what? Screw those guys. We're just going to change things because we can, and we don't have to worry about it.
Well, I mean, also you have to think that as they become one of a more sort of normal company trying to always increase
the
that
Apple
shareholder
model.
Value.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what they're doing now. They're trying to force people, you like your FSD and you paid $15,000 for it. And we have a new car with new fancy stuff. We'll let you one time upgrade and keep your FSD or whatever. Because they're turning those knobs. So, so they want to sell you a new car. So,
you'd hope, though, with the speed of the 3 and the Y with Hardware 3 and the newer MCU, that the cars would last a little bit longer. Because mine's a little long in the tooth. And my generation had those eMMC chips burn out, the 8 GB chips. I actually had that replaced because it was recalled. But I would love to keep my car for a long time. I'm okay with it being a little slow, but it'd be nice if it was faster. It's kind of unthinkable that most people have phones for 3-4 years. Some people upgrade once, every year. Some people wait 2 years, but
I think
like,
2 years
car
is
almost,
the cycle. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and my car is really old at this point. Right. And I want to drive it even longer. The math I'm doing is, if the battery dies, I'm still better off buying a new one than trading it in, losing all the money, and then paying extra for a newer one. So I hope the car's going to last.
The thing about that is that it really is the phone model, right? If it's a double-edged sword. One of the best things to me about my car is that there are software updates, and my car is kind of like a new car. I see new features in it, every couple months or whatever. But the other side of that is, these new features require more processing, or they're, they allocate more resources to it. So yeah, I'm noticing, like I said earlier, I'm trying to switch through the different Sentry Mode videos or whatever, and I'm sitting there waiting for the thing to load. That's kind of disappointing, but it's kind of like your phone. Your phone gets updated, and it's using the software is requiring more resources, and your phone is starting to get slower in terms of the interface with it. And that's kind of what's happening with our cars. If they never updated the software, you'd think, I have this nice slick interface and it should just stay that way forever. But then the interface would get long in the tooth, right? You feel like, this is kind of old. And it's a little bit, I think about the first, and I sort of mentioned this before, the first, when the Model S first came out and was first introduced back in 2009, and I had chatted with some employees. I think I was out to dinner with some people that worked at the Menlo Park store when that used to exist. And, that the sort of paradigm which had happened with smartphones, this is 2000. At this point, this was like maybe 2008, in 2009 with the Model S first sort of got unveiled. But that idea you have this phone and it's sort of like the dumb terminal. I can have this phone that has very minimal processing because all the cool processing is happening on servers in the cloud. And that was kind of the idea with the Model S too. Like all your infotainment stuff, all your maps, all this stuff is happening in the cloud. And then so your local computer, your local car, and again, this was before autopilot and all that stuff, can just happen on your local car, can just have very minimal processing. And as the cloud gets better, you can offer more services and your car doesn't need to change at all. And that, as with phones, has turned out to not be true, right? There's so much stuff that we want to be able to do local, and now the phones are like major powerhouses, right? Because you want to be able to play games on the phone. You want to take pictures that have neural nets that, you know, process the images. And that's what the cars are doing too. So you actually need stronger processing, and your car basically needs to get updated just like your home PC used to have to.
And Apple's made it a selling point that the data doesn't leave the device for certain sensitive tasks, right? So it's this whole privacy shift too that we're seeing.
Right. And what turned out to be the limitation with phones and with the car probably is more bandwidth type things, right? Like you're going to take a picture, you're not going to upload that whole picture for processing and then bring it back down. You know, you want that to happen locally. And yeah, there's the whole privacy thing too. And of course, with things like FSD, you need all that stuff to happen fast in real time, so you're not going to wait for the latency of some server to decide if you need to stop for this semi truck headed right for you. You know,
yeah, it's unfortunate though, because you know, in the analogy, you're right, and that's how many people operate or work that way, but it's not how all of us do, right? So for me, my phone is a dumb terminal. I, as most people, stop using their desktops or their laptops as much. They're mostly on their phone. I use a desktop or a laptop just as much now as I did, you know, 20 years ago. My phone, I don't do any photo editing on my phone. I do send it up to the cloud and I'll do it on my desktop if I want to do it. I don't use the apps on my phone. I keep phones 4 years, 5 years. I have a microscope I use. I'll replace components in my phone. I'll swap the batteries out. I'll, you know, fix connectors that break, just because I don't personally need the power in my phone itself. It's a dumb terminal for me. But you're right, that's not the model the industry wants to go. And I definitely agree with you that it looks like, you know, when it comes to Tesla, like, okay, you don't want to do the thing, I'll go buy a new heart, you know, MCU, and I'll swap it out myself, right? I'll flash the firmware, I'll do whatever I need to do on it. But they've physically made it not possible to happen now, because it physically can't fit in.
Because
they want me to buy a new car. Yeah. And it's like, that's unfortunate.
Well, Lewis, I think I may have to fly you in for a little MCU upgrade, because that would be sweet if you could hook me up. But speaking of swapping out parts, I do want to segue into the next topic, which is this idea of something we've heard all the way back from Tesla. And when was it, Doug? 2016, 2017?
2009. Back when the Model S was first introduced, they talked about battery swaps back then. So, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize the idea was that old. But yeah, the idea is battery swapping, right? So I think, Doug, you found a company that is kind of bringing that idea back.
Well, it's come back into, people have been talking about it recently, because just last month, there are several articles that went around about a company named Ample, which is in Northern California, which is trying to do battery swaps. And, so I get asked about it. I got asked about it today with some friends I'm traveling with. We were using the scoots, as I call them. And we're scooting over here and scooting over there. You get to one and, this one, the battery's kind of low. And so we would just go find another one that had a better, more charge in the battery. And he was asking me, in his naive way, about swapping batteries. And the idea's been around. I would say that Tesla had, talked about it in 2009, mainly as a bit of a marketing thing. The Model S, it's been some time, if people remember, they were basically throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticked. What stuck. The Model S seven-seater, you know, fast battery swap, fast charging. You know, they talked about all that stuff. And it was trying to be, it was also supposed to be a 30, you know, the equivalent of like a $35,000 vehicle or whatever. You know, some of those things proved out and some didn't. And the battery swap for a personal vehicle never really made too much sense, particularly when the health of the battery is, you know, a thing that's really important about your car. And you can be nice to your battery, you can be mean to your battery. You know, you can charge it to 100% and let it sit at 100%. You can supercharge all the time. You can let it deep discharge and then charge it back up. Or you can let it sit at like 60% most of the time and charge it nice and gently and keep it in a nice controlled temperature environment. And so like if you're swapping a battery, you've like babied your battery and then you got some battery that somebody abused and then you're stuck with it. That never really made a whole lot of sense. And Tesla, they talked about it and never really did it until it made money sense for them because of the zero emission vehicle credits. I mean, it's history, but basically what had happened was the regulators try to write things in a way that would benefit hydrogen, right? And so what would help hydrogen, and well, what's the one thing that you don't have with EVs was fast refueling, right? And they try to put it on the order, like I can charge my car in 15 minutes, right? And get a very usable amount of range with that. And I think they try to make it something like, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, you had to get so much going. And the only way to reasonably do that was a battery swap. And Tesla did this whole dog and pony show, and you may remember, right? I mean, you saw that, where they had like a timer going and here's someone.
Timer goes up.
Yeah, here's someone filling another car with gas and here's the battery swap. And it was so, I mean, it was
the gimmick.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that really looked at this had to like know, like, what the heck? Because Tesla implied like, oh, there's some robot in there that went and lifted the battery out and put the new battery in. If there was some robot in there, they would have showed it, right? Instead, they're on the stage, and you know it's just a bunch, like probably a whole team of like one person per rivet, like ready to unscrew the battery pack and screw in the new pack. And you know, and the stage, if you saw the stage, was really tall, you know, because it probably had a whole team of people and a nice scissor lift ready to get the new battery in, another one ready to go on there. And I think they only made one actual battery swapping station, and station is kind of a generous word. And you had to call ahead of time, so some technician could go there and do it for you. And we've had, you know, people on TMC have talked about, okay, I got it done. Tesla really didn't want me to get it done, and then it took an hour or something ridiculous when they could have just supercharged. Because it's probably, in practice, it was probably just one guy, you know, basically a service guy doing it. And, you know, just so Tesla could say they did it so that, you know, they could get these credits. And I think they rewrote the regulations and then, you know, they just probably gave up on it. And again, it just never really made sense. It might make some sense for fleet vehicles. You know, if you own a whole bunch of vehicles and you for some reason can't wait 20 minutes and you need to keep going in like 5 minutes, then that, you know, that might work.
It's easier to just have additional vehicles that are charging, right? Like,
yeah, in a fleet.
Just
yeah,
the overhead in the fleet just to be able to do battery swaps doesn't even seem worth it.
Yeah, and that's actually what prompted my friend's question about it today, because, you know, we would just go to another scooter, you know, and just find another one. It's like, oh, can they do that with cars? You know, you just get a car. Can we just swap cars or whatever? Which is funny. It made me think about the Formula E, because that's exactly what they did there, was they swapped cars. And I was always annoyed with that, because I always thought that was one place where they should do like fast battery swaps, because that would be fun to watch. You know, you'd have like a, you know, F1 style team come in and swap the battery out. Yeah, so, when we talk about battery swaps, I mean, we have to mention Better Place, which was the Project Better Place, which was this company by this Israeli guy named Shai Agassi, I believe his name was. And that was a real attempt. I'm like, okay, let's do battery swaps. And the only way it made sense for the consumer was if they don't even own the battery, right? So they're not going to worry about the health of the battery because it's not something that they own. But it was always, I could never really understand the business model, because here's the company, they're owning all these batteries. So they're owning a depreciating asset that people are going to just, you know, treat poorly. And the other way they try to make money was that they would charge you for charging the car when you're charging it at home, you know, just didn't make any sense. Really. So, and you know, they went under. They didn't last that long. But that guy was really good at selling ideas, and people thought, oh, that's going to change the world. And Renault did something like that too, because what's the one expensive thing about an EV was really the battery pack. And so it was like, well, you know, they basically separated it out where you could buy the car but lease the battery. And again, that's just kind of ridiculous. Why don't you just roll it into a whole car lease or whatever? Because you're still paying for it one way or the other, right?
For anyone that actually cares about the longevity, that's what leasing is for. You're just going to lease the car, right? Like, it almost doesn't make sense to lease just the battery pack and add all the complexity of being able to swap the battery when you can just lease the vehicles and, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was just the thing. I mean, it's kind of like SolarCity, that plan where, okay, here you have, you know, the upfront cost of owning solar panels, if some other company basically acting as a bank, you know, floating the cost of that and you getting the immediate cost-saving benefit on your electric bill. So it's a psychological thing. But again, SolarCity, here they are owning a depreciating asset, and they, you know, things didn't work out so well for them financially either, and they were doing quite poorly until they got bought by Tesla.
Mm. Wasn't he his cousin or something like that?
Yeah. It was some cousin's Rive, I believe the name was, some cousins of Elon. So there was a whole lawsuit about it, a whole shareholder lawsuit, because it's kind of, you know, this is a company that Elon owns a lot of assets for, and he uses his other company to buy that company, mm-hmm. and, you know, basically bail himself out with another company, you know, whatever. Yeah. I mean, regardless, I think Tesla Energy makes sense. It makes sense for Tesla to be in that business. I just don't know that the Solar City idea, you know, has that much longevity.
Sorry, go ahead. Finish.
No, I mean, just because of what I already said about, you know, owning, like, the main thing that made sense for them was that they made it easier for the consumer, because every state had all these different incentives. And so basically the business model was, we'll figure out what all the incentives are. And basically they only went into markets where there were tons of incentives, and they would basically calculate out all those incentives and see if they could make money from doing this. And then they'd make it, you know, relatively turnkey for the consumer, except that, you know, of course their service hasn't been great as of the last several years.
Yeah, I think the mistake that I see, or at least the how I would have done it differently, is where Tesla really shines is on the engineering side and on the manufacturing side. And really, they should have been engineering and manufacturing the power systems and not trying to get into the installer game, because the installer game is a service business, which they are notoriously bad at. And it requires a massive staff and operational overhead to do something at the scale of being nationwide or in multiple countries and whatever. And really, I mean, there's so many extremely successful companies that produce parts and goods and sell through resellers and in local installers, to where they don't have to manage all that crap. They can have a certification process. Yo, you want to sell Tesla panels? You got to go to Tesla school and pay money and get certified in Tesla. And when you get the power of the Tesla brand, you'll have consumers going, I want Tesla panels. And they call their local solar installer and go, hey, do you sell Tesla panels? Which motivates them to then get certified. So it's like, I don't know why they tried to own the whole end. I mean, okay, I know why they tried to, but
yeah, we know why. We know why they tried to.
But it just kind of was a silly business play, in my opinion. And realistically, they'd be better off just focusing on what they're good at and, you know, incentivize and building the demand from their brand, which kind of exists. I have Tesla solar panels on my house. Honestly, my experience was fine. You know, Tesla installed it and did all of that. I didn't go through a third party. But I live in Austin. So, I mean, Tesla's got a pretty good presence here.
Something similar happened with body repairs, right? They eventually wised up and said, okay, we'll have Tesla certified, you know, right, collision repair places. But still, they had the bottleneck of not getting the parts to do the to do them. So, but that'll be yet another tangent on top of another tangent. I think we were talking about battery swaps, right?
Right.
I'll ask you one last sort of sidebar question on batteries. Yeah. Speaking of Tesla solar and all that stuff, I'm actually thinking about potentially getting a Powerwall because I can't take the power outages anymore in my area. Why do you guys think, besides the issue of maybe cannibalizing the business, but why are the Powerwalls so expensive compared to the main battery packs? I mean, I can get 90 kilowatt hours for what, 15 grand? Why is 13 kilowatt hours 10,000? It's just, do you guys know?
Because they can.
Yeah, I would say,
It's not cost of materials. It's not cost of materials. It's literally, when you look at the market, it's purely a price point of what they can get away with doing. And with the car, they kind of have to do the battery.
Like,
they have to make it as competitive as they can, and they have to get that price down as much as they can. If you look at the competitor battery systems, like, yeah, you can save a lot of money. Honestly, if you want a battery backup system, if you don't go with Tesla, it's much cheaper. Hmm. But when it comes to home goods, there's a lot to say about value and people's interest in name brands. Name brands carry a lot. It's like having, you know, a Sub-Zero fridge or a Viking stove or Wolf stove or those types of things.
Well, the Toto toilet,
all that kind of stuff, like, you know, Lutron shades, all those types of things add value to your home. And so being able to say, oh, I have Tesla Powerwall, it'll retain the value more than if you go with some generic off the shelf. Even though economically it's probably not worth it, but it's purely because they can.
I thought you were going to ask a different question. I thought you were going to ask, why doesn't Tesla let you do vehicle to house or whatever, vehicle to load?
That's another good question.
And Tesla has said in the past that, they're sort of, you know, the batteries are designed to do different things, right? And there's some costs in terms of, putting cycles on your car that could be on the house. But I think
you don't really want to use the same battery technology.
Like, right.
Yeah, like the LFP batteries technically are better for Powerwall. Which,
but they're selling cars now with LFP batteries.
Sure.
And I think I wouldn't, for like the house backup or whatever, like the kind of thing where you might do load shifting and that sort of thing, I wouldn't use the car for that. But it would be nice for emergency situations. I think that's something that they're going to have to offer on the Cybertruck just to be competitive with the other vehicles that are already out there. So we'll see if they end up doing that. But again, there was an interview with Elon relatively recently, and he basically was like, buy a Powerwall, right? Because, you know, that's, again, cannibalizing the business, right?
It's a good point. You know, I always thought that it's the cannibalization, but then also they just don't have enough capacity to make all these power walls, right? I mean, they would rather be making cars. So that always made sense to me. All righty, guys. Any other thoughts before we wrap it up?
Well, we had one more thing to discuss, right? You're going to tell us about a certain podcast, right?
We can do that. You know, I wasn't sure if you guys want to save it for next time because we're approaching an hour.
We can be quick about it, I think.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Since we've just taken this stroll down memory lane, we talked about 2009, the Model S originally coming out. There's a new podcast out, and if you guys have not listened to it yet, it's definitely interesting, and we recommend you check it out. It's done by Vox, which is the parent company of The Verge. I think it's done in collaboration with Recode, and there's a couple other players involved. But it's this interesting look at Tesla. And typically that whole podcast series looks at Facebook, Meta, you know, just chronicling some news that are happening in the tech space. And now they're looking at Tesla. So episode one starts with, you know, how did Tesla get founded? And they kind of introduced, which may a lot of people may not know, this common knowledge that Elon Musk didn't found the company, right? It was two other people. And Doug, you can probably give us a little bit more historical context on that. And then it talks about the competition and kind of where we are now in 2023, Tesla having a huge market share, but there's also now proper products from other manufacturers on the market that people can buy. So I wanted to get your guys' thoughts. I listened to the three episodes that are out. I think it's an interesting take. There's a couple of things that rub me the wrong way. But I want to ask you, first of all, who do you guys think this is for? Because as an enthusiast who's kind of lived through the history, I knew most of the stuff. And I do wonder, someone who's maybe not into Tesla, but into tech, like, you know, who's this for? First and foremost, what did you guys think?
I think it's for, I think it's probably for the person that doesn't know as much and is just interested in, like, people that are just sort of coming into it. You know, in the last year or last couple of years, like around the same time, we had different TV documentaries. Like, there's one on Theranos, there's one on Uber, and the other one on WeWork. Yeah. And you know what? They are all really entertaining. Yep. And had great casts, and I watched all of them, especially the Theranos one. Amanda Seyfried was great as Elizabeth Holmes. And so I think, you know, this is sort of going along the same lines. I mean, the Tesla story is full of drama. At some point, there will be that movie documentary. I think it may be a little early, just because the story is still being written, especially with all the Twitter stuff. And I think, you know, what we'll do is we'll leave this as kind of a teaser. And so we'll, you know, we'll sort of suggest folks check out this podcast, and we'll, you know, we can discuss it more in depth next time, as we're running a little long now. But I think it's for, you know, if you're the hardcore Tesla fan, I still think it's interesting to listen to, because it gives you a sense of, okay, how does the media really see this? And maybe, you know, something that slightly rubs me the wrong way about the show is that it feels very, it has that sort of entertainment sort of spin to it. And like, and it kind of jumps through, things kind of quickly. But it really is an entertaining story though. I mean, the Tesla story, there's so much drama, so many interesting things. And one thing I wish they would cover, and they haven't mentioned, and it was kind of covered in Ashley Vance's book, I think her name was Mary Beth Brown was Tesla. Elon had a personal assistant, basically, and I saw her at everything. You know, back early days, I went to a lot of Tesla events, and she was at the launch of the Model S, and she was like direct. She was doing all this stuff, and one of the things that she really did was like, she was like almost like a minder for Elon. Like, he would start to say something or do something. I remember once he did it, I think it was a 60 Minutes interview, and they had him go into like a Nissan dealership, and she just came in, and she was in a follow car, and she just came and yanked him out of there and said, nope, we're not doing this. So she had a lot of wisdom in terms of, you know, being a kind of a filter for Elon that he no longer has. The story is she asked for a raise, and he told her, well, why don't you take 2 weeks off, and I'll see if you deserve a raise. Basically, see if her job is even really needed. And then when she came back, her job was no longer there. He's since sort of refuted that story, but of course he is going to refute it, because, you know, he wants things to sound, you know, sound more positive for him. So anyway, I guess we'll just recommend that podcast. People check it out, and we'll discuss it more in depth next time, and there'll probably be another episode of it by the time we do our next episode. So,
yeah, sounds good. We definitely want to get your take on what's maybe dramatized and what's maybe fabricated, and what's what you remember as being real from happening back in the day. All right, everybody. I would say that's a wrap. We do want to thank our producers, Adam and Danny. Also, Danny is in Greece. Doug is in Italy. It's just the two unpaid interns, Lewis and Seb, who are working from home. Sad.
I want to be in Italy, right, or Greece.
That'd be way nicer than Georgia or Texas.
We'll do a remote podcast. I don't know where you want to go. We'll all go there.
Japan.
Yeah, I'd love to go back to Japan.
Let's do it.
On your dime, I'm down. But thank you all for joining today. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so on X, not Twitter, and YouTube. If you want to support the show, please consider becoming a supporting member, and you can, of course, join us on the Tesla Motors Club website. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.